Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed your time away. And we're going to start by talking a little bit about some Azure functionality that should hopefully help you be able to connect your Windows Phone, Windows 8 applications into a backend that can be used for everybody. So one of the things we're talking about more than anything else has got to do with the cloud. And when you're talking about Azure, that's pretty much the term cloud has been used and abused so many different ways. When we're talking about on the back end of Windows Phone, Windows 8 kinds of functionality, what we're talking about is the ability to provide a level of scale, a level of computing that is very easy for you to connect to from your applications themselves, whether they be Windows Phone 8, whether they be Windows or Windows Store applications. You can connect to the back end using the same kind of mechanism in both cases. And you have the ability to take whatever functionality you happen to create, and you can scale it out at an internet level as far as you need it to go. And when you get right down to it, when you're talking about things like Windows Azure Mobile Services as well, you're not even limited to the Windows Phone 8, Windows Store functionality. It also provides hooks into iOS and Android devices as well. So regardless of where you're coming from, you've got a back end that you can have single piece of functionality you develop, and you can scale it out to handle as many users as your applications will eventually want to be able to deal with. So you've got internet scale, cloud functionality, and the ability to push into different apps and devices as you happen to need to be able to do so. From the perspective of where they happen to be located, this is a global reach. So regardless of where your clients are, you are going to be able to have your application be close to where they happen to be. They have data centers, Azure has data centers all over the world. They've got Content Delivery Network has endpoints that push stuff out close to where your users are, so that you've got that global reach in terms of the functionality that happens to be out there. And this is especially important for people who are, developing applications on the side. You're only going to pay for what you use. This is not a matter of, I've got to drop $500 a month down to get the biggest server that I might ever possibly use. What it means is that you're going to be able to only pay for the level of functionality you happen to need. If you've only got a few users, the amount that you're going to pay on a monthly basis is going to be free or very, very low. If, on the other hand, all of a sudden your application goes viral, you've got thousands and thousands of users hitting your site all the time, you have the ability to scale up as you need to. If it turns out that that particular usage pattern is a burst, so in other words, it's going to go up for a month, it's going to come back down again, you haven't laid out for any kind of hardware, you don't have any kind of a contract sign that says you have to pay a couple hundred dollars a month for the next year. You just simply dial your functionality back down and pay for whatever you happen to need. So that flexibility to do what you need to do from the application's perspective, so that you can bring your level up, bring it back down again, up, down, none of that actually is a challenge for you to be able to implement. More importantly, again, you don't have to think about writing your application to support that. You put your application into the Azure platform, and you can just simply turn the dial and take advantage of that internet scaling that the cloud happens to offer. Again, paying only for whatever you happen to be using at any particular time. Only when it's being used, right? So again, if it turns out it's not being used at all, okay, because the metrics that Azure happen to be using are usage driven. They're CPU resources. They're the amount of data that happens to be transferred out of your Azure functionality. So if it's just sitting there, again, don't get charged. So from the person who is doing this it's important for both professional and hobby developers that you don't actually have to spend the money, that you're not going to potentially see any revenue. So as you monetize your application, as you're kind of building out the audience for it, you have that nice little piece of comfort that it's not breaking the bank while you're trying to build up an audience for whatever you're trying to do. Now, inside of the Azure world, you have a number of different back-end options. And so the one that you're going to pick depends very much on what your front-end requirement is and what they need from a back-end. So we're going to take a look at what some of them happen to be. In the Azure world, at the compute level, It basically falls into three different categories. There's Azure Websites, which is a more or less the ability to deploy your own website out into Azure. Azure provides IIS server, so you can actually have your websites being developed in Node.js or PHP or in ASP.NET functionality. And it provides the Azure provides the server, it handles the virtual machines, it has the operating system. You just simply deploy your application out to websites, and your website is ready to be used. There's cloud services. Cloud services is a little bit different in that you actually have to architect your site to take advantage of cloud services. You create a number of web rules, which are endpoints that listen over HTTP, handle incoming requests, and you have some number of worker rules whose job it is to take requests that are being made through the web rules and handle background kinds of processing. So you write your application to have web rules, you write your application to have worker rules. It feels like a website in that there's HTTP endpoints that you have access to, but it doesn't deploy quite the same as, say, a normal ASP.NET website would be, or what Node.js or what a PHP site would be. And then finally, the third option here is virtual machines. And virtual machines are basically you rent a or you get a machine that you have complete access to. You can install Linux operating system on it. You can install Windows 2008, Windows 2012. You get to pick and choose what you do, and now you become responsible for deploying applications out onto that. So whether or not it's you've got your own site, you've got some third-party software, you've got other things you want to have licensed out there, you now have that machine that you can use as your back end. Still, by the way, having the ability to scale up and down in terms of how many machines are running and how much memory and how many cores that they have as well, you have that ability to scale up and down even at the VM level. And that's really what all three of these things offer. Your deployment choices are, you know, I can deploy a website, I can build my application using the cloud service functionality, I can have a virtual machine that I deploy whatever application I want out there onto it, and in every single case, I can just simply scale up, scale down, paying for the functionality that I happen to need as I go. So, drilling just a little bit down into some details about these particular pieces, on the Azure Websites functionality, as I mentioned, there's three, you have an IIS server running in behind. And so because of what it's IIS, you can support the technologies that IIS supports. So you can create yourself an ASP.NET application, deploy that very, very easily. You can use Node.js, you can use PHP. Again, take your application, deploy it out to the website, and it runs. So you get to pick the technology that you're most comfortable with respect to being able to write your back-end functionality. The deployment mechanism is incredibly easy to do. And we're going to be demonstrating at least one of them in just a couple of seconds. But you've got the ability to reach out to that site through FTP. So you can use FTP, pick your favorite FTP client, and push your application out to the website that way. You've also got very tight integration with both Git and TFS Online. So you have that ability to, in both cases, you can arrange so that you push from those repositories out to your website. So you get to use TFS, you get to use Git as your source control, which is awesome in and of itself. And then you can arrange so that from those repositories, you will, as part of a build, as part of a pull request, push request, you end up pushing your application out to Azure Websites. Also slick within the websites is, again, because it's pay-as-you-use, you do have, at the lowest level, the ability to have free websites. Okay, so you have it's certainly adequate for a testing kind of environment. If you're trying to get a few users out there, it's incredibly useful for that. I personally have used it for putting things like privacy policies in terms of service out there, because it's inexpensive, it doesn't cost me anything, and for things like Windows Store applications and for certain of the functionality you have inside of Windows Phone applications, you need to have an online privacy policy, for example. You create a privacy policy on a static page, you push it out to websites, doesn't cost anything, and you've got all of that nice functionality. But beyond even just simply putting things like privacy policy out there, again, you can have back-end functionality that we're going to be, like I said, demonstrating shortly, with all of the scaling up that you need to be able to handle your future growth. So speaking of demos, let's start by actually running through one. We're going to run through this in a couple of different ways. So I'm going to start by coming up against my Azure portal. And what you're looking at here is Azure portal, Azure management portal is what it is. And this is what the latest and greatest looks like. So the idea is when you have signed up for your Azure account and you've gone through the process, you're going to come in here. Now, as you can see, I've been kind of busy with Azure already, but you'll start off with probably a little bit fewer items than this. But the process of actually creating any one of the items is quite simple. So we'll start off with a particular website. If you go into the websites itself, and actually you don't even need to. In websites, you'll see a list. But down here in the bottom left, you'll notice that there's a large icon that says New. When you click on New, it pops up a dialog that will walk you through the process, allowing you to create any one of the Azure artifacts that you happen to want. We're working on the compute under website, and I am going to specify a quick create. Now, the idea here is that you can now specify a URL. And so you come into here, and I'm going to say, see if this one happens to be available. Nope, it's not. Fortunately, well, anyway, you specify a URL endpoint. You'll notice that it's adding azurewebsites.net to the end of it. One of the limitations of your free website is you're using that particular domain. If you want to actually have your own domain behind it, you can certainly do so. You just have to move up to the next level of Azure website. But you pick a URL that you happen to want. I've already used AZ DevCamp, so I'll end up going with, I will actually show you the code here, but I've got one that's already up and going. You specify a region in which you want to put it. So Eastern US, Western US, Asia, or Europe. You specify a subscription that you happen to have, and then you can go off and you can create that nice little website. And so you can see down here at the bottom that it's actually going and spinning up that particular website. The nice thing is it takes almost no time at all. In fact, in the amount of time it said for me to say that, it is now running. And so you go and drill into that particular site. The first time you go through the site, you end up with this little quick start. But if I pop to a dashboard, right, here's my URL, and when I click on it, lo and behold, my website happens to be there. In terms of being able to create a website, that is all you need to be able to do. Now, in and of itself, that's not really a lot. So let's kind of take this to the next level. So I'm going to pop this down for a second, and then I am going to, you'll notice I had mentioned you can do deployment through a couple of mechanisms. Here I can set up my Git publishing. Here I can set up my TFS publishing. I'm going to download this thing called a publish profile. And those particular public settings, I'm going to save that away for just a couple of seconds from now. But like I said, the big thing here is I have a website that is ready for me to deploy stuff to. So let me do exactly that. Come over into Visual Studio. To create this project, you just simply go file, new, open up a project. We're going to pick an ASP.NET MVC4 web application. Give it a name here. And because it's an MVC application, we have some choices. In this particular instance, I'm going to go with just simply a straight web API. Now, this is just an ordinary application, an ordinary web application. I could have picked a web forms application. I could have picked older versions of MVC. It doesn't have anything to do. Nothing that we've done to this point is specific to what the Azure websites that we happen to be talking about. However, through the Solution Explorer, if I right-click on the project itself, you'll notice that I have this option called Publish. And when I specify Publish, it now gives me the ability to take this web application and be able to publish it someplace. Now, if you recall, we had downloaded our publishing profile for the website that we created. I'm going to import that profile in it because that profile has information about the endpoints and credentials that will allow me to easily publish my application out to Azure. And if you recall, it was AZ DevCamp 2, those profile settings right there. Now I've got my connection. So this is going to be using WebDeploy, it's going to be going to the Azure, that nice little endpoint that you happen to see there. It's got an application name, a username, a password. And here's my destination. And I can validate my connection, and lo and behold, you'll see that it turns green. I love it when time's out like that, doesn't it? So behind the scenes, I've also got additional settings that I've got. I can specify whether I want a debugger or release configuration. I can configure databases if I want to have database running along the same lines. If this is a site that I've published before, I can actually see differences between what's already out there and what I'm about to publish to make sure that it's reasonable in any way, shape, or form, and that's what the preview will get you. But for the moment, I'm just going to turn around and publish this particular site. And you'll see it's going through a whole bunch of stuff. And in a couple of seconds, it is going to tell me that it's complete. Because that's what good demos will do for me while I'm being nice and all of that. So at this point, it has now published. Now, this was a web API. And the way this particular out-of-the-box template for the web API works is that I can say API/values being spelled slightly differently where I come from. And what it's going to do is it's now hitting the site that I've deployed. You can see it's going to download it. I can open that up, and inside of Notepad, here's the values that happen to be pulled across. And if you go back into my code for just a second, where's my values? I've lost my values. There it is. There we go. You can see these were the two values that were originally intended to come out. Okay, so it's created the site. We've published it up to Azure websites. We actually have a live site that we're all ready to use. It is literally that simple. There's not a lot more to it than that in terms of actually being able to publish and get your functionality pushed out to Azure websites. Now, it's also fairly easy to take an application and be able to include that functionality, the functionality talking to this particular website, into so that from a Windows Store, from a Windows Phone application, so we can do it. So we already have, in my little web API solution, we've already included this little Metro-style client. And my Metro-style client has got an on-navigated to. And so what I'm going to do is drop a couple of things into my application. So my on-navigated to is going to call out to something called getItems. And then getItems itself is going to asynchronously make a call to my Azure website. So what you can see this site is going to do is it's going to use HTTP client. It's going to use the get async against this particular endpoint, which is the same one that I popped into my browser just a couple of seconds ago. If the response is a success status code, it will read the content in the response as a string. It's going to parse the data and drop it into a list that happens to be out there. And the list itself, if you look in the main page, is just simply a XAML-based list box with a nice little template. Okay? So there's not a lot to the functionality here in terms of what it's going to render out, but it ends up being a nice mechanism for showing how you can make a call to that web API running in your Azure website and pull the data back into a store application. So I'm going to run this through the simulator. And my simulator is going to pop up. And lo and behold, you can see that value 1 and value 2 happen to be there. And again, from a pure coding perspective, it's not exceptionally complicated. It was literally just simply a matter of making an HTTP client call against this particular back end. So very simple, very straightforward, standards based. So if you have anything that has the ability to produce HTTP requests and be able to parse the results back, you can push against that back end and get that information back out to wherever you need it to go. And to suggest that HTTP requesting capabilities is ubiquitous is understating it. I'm pretty certain that I've got pens in my pocket that can make HTTP requests. So it's incredibly standards-based, very, very open, very easy to do in just about any environment that you happen to want to be able to grab it from. So let's switch back to the slides. You just saw the demo on the websites. As I mentioned earlier, there were a couple of other backends that you can have inside of Azure. I mentioned cloud services. This becomes a much richer, multi-tiered kind of architecture. There's a lot more, architecturally, there's a lot more that you can do with cloud services than you can do with just simply with Azure websites that happen to be out there. As well, with respect to being able to turn things up and down quickly, the capabilities that cloud services offer is a little bit more than what Azure websites or virtual machines have to offer. And it's mostly got to do with responsiveness. One of the things that's actually very slick about cloud services is if I go from one instance to 10 instances, it's literally, okay, it's not literally instantaneously because that would just be wrong. It's very, very close to instantaneously. It happens within seconds that you have that much additional throughput. If you crank an Azure website from 1 until 10, there is a bit of a delay. It's not like it's hours, it's more like it's seconds, but it does have to spin up the additional websites. The same thing with the VMs, with the virtual machines we'll talk about in a second. For me to go from one virtual machine to 7, in the back, behind the scenes, under the covers, it does have to create some virtual machines. That takes a period of time. So in terms of the ability to respond very quickly to bursts in functionality, cloud services is better than the other two options. Again, it's a matter of perspective. It's relatively better. It's not like the others are bad. But depending upon what you need, you may find that to be quite useful. Also, we mentioned virtual machines. And the idea behind a virtual machine is this is a box that you control. And whereas Azure websites, you got a box that came with IIS and came with Windows operating system and everything underneath the stack there. In this case, it comes with just the stack. It comes with a machine, networking capabilities, and you can lay out operating systems and functionalities as you want to. You can actually go so far as if you happen to have a virtual machine, a VHD image laying around, you can even load that up into Azure and use that as the basis for spinning up your virtual machine inside of Azure. So you've got a lot of flexibility. You also notice that we're including Linux, OpenSUSE, Ubuntu as part of the options that are available to you. When you go and actually create a VM, there's a number of gallery images that are available to you that run the gamut from Windows 2008, Windows 2012, and a number of distributions of Linux that happen to be available that you can just simply pick and choose and spin it up. Or you can just simply take an empty machine, install your operating system on it, install your applications on it, do what you want to do. So, again, this is about the choices that you happen to have. In one case, websites. It's coming with IIS, I can deploy a website and there I go. With virtual machines, I have a machine and I can do what I want to it with respect to adding the functionality that I need to add in order to make it work out. To give you a sense of the websites versus cloud services discussion, right? These are at a point by point level, you can see what we've got going on. So websites, cloud services, both support ASP.NET, classic ASP, Node.js, PHP. Both have access to additional Azure functionality, caching, the service bus, Azure SQL databases, which is a cool thing unto itself, the different table and blob storage models that Azure happens to have. They both have access to that kind of functionality. In terms of shared content and configuration, this is where cloud services doesn't have this. You've got the ability to share content across different websites. Cloud services tend to be a little more isolated by themselves. The deployment model that you have with websites includes the ability to have pushes from Git or have automatic deployment coming out of builds within TFS, or you can do an FTP deployment. Cloud services don't really work like that because when you're deploying to a cloud service, you're deploying a piece of executable code that acts as a worker or a web role. I've already mentioned the near instant deployment, the near instant, the ability to push stuff up very quickly in with Azure websites. You saw when I pushed my my ASP.NET MVC site up, it was within seconds that it was available to go. Deploying out to cloud services takes a little bit longer, so while I can spin up cloud services very quickly, my ability to deploy is a little bit slower. In both cases, you do have integration with MySQL, so you have support for using MySQL database on the back end. Now, one of the benefits that cloud services does offer is a staging area, and websites does not. When I push to websites, that's the site. I've replaced whatever's there with whatever I happen to have pushed out. With cloud services, you've got a production environment and a staging environment, and so you've got the ability to deploy into a staging environment, and then at your choice, you flip. And when you flip, the production becomes staging, staging becomes production. If something goes wrong, not that you guys would ever have anything go wrong, but when other people have stuff go wrong, they've got the ability to simply flip back quickly. So you have a little bit of a fail-safe just in case you're in a production environment and need to handle the case where something bad goes on with that perspective. Network isolation. Cloud services are isolated at a network level. Access to the servers under the covers in terms of being able to touch on the machines that are running. The ability to run programs with elevated permissions. These are things that cloud services do bring to the table that websites don't have, along with startup tasks and the ability to use an unsupported framework or library. So, again, because websites is presented to you as a machine that already has stuff running, you don't get to deploy, hey, I've got a third-party component I want to include in my web application. You don't get to do that inside of websites if it requires a server install, okay? Whereas I do have that capability in cloud services. So there's a little bit of a trade-off in terms of what happens to be offered, and there's benefits to both sides, and so the choice you have to make is which way you're going to end up going. Along with those compute functions, there's other services that Azure has that have the potential to be useful to you as you use your back end, as you figure out what your back end is. The way the Azure platform happens to lay itself out, there are a lot of different bits and pieces, and you can pick and choose the stuff that you use or don't use depending upon what you need. And where I find this to be incredibly useful is most of the things that you see on the slide here have got to do with what some of you might think of as, quote, enterprise-level functionality. And to be fair, they do support enterprises, so they're absolutely built to scale out to that particular level. But, and this is the big but, if it turns out you need to work with a service bus, messaging between two different devices, because messaging is part of Azure, you can just simply turn on the service bus, pay for what you use, and you don't have to worry about laying out the infrastructure or figuring out the infrastructure to make it work. If you have to deal with identity, you can turn on access control services and utilize that as your identity mechanism, and you don't have to build out, you know, AD Active Directory or ADFS or any of those things. So while it may seem like these things are enterprise, and they are, you may find them useful, and you can just plug them into what you're doing, not have to worry about, you know, buying a server, getting the licensing, getting the stuff configured, because that's handled, that's covered off in what you're paying for Azure. So just to kind of walk through these so you can see where it happens to be, starting in the top left, because, you know, why not? Big data is the ability to be able to handle large volumes of data. Probably the easiest thing to think of is if you're trying to parse a log file for an incredibly busy server and you want to be able to extract data and query and be able to visualize the data so that you can see the kinds of trends and things that you have when websites are being navigated by different people. Big data is, and actually you may hear the term Hadoop used as being one of the things that's supported inside of the big data portion of Azure. The database option is incredibly useful. You have the ability with Azure websites, with Azure itself, to be able to configure a SQL database, a SQL Server or MySQL database that's available to you, available to your particular website through the cloud environment. And that database has the ability to scale up and scale down, again, based on your requirements as well. So if you happen to need a database on your back end, you want to be able to store something, it is very inexpensive to put a database up and be able to hook it into your website and be able to, it's a SQL database. You've got access to SQL through whatever, through your website, through your coding on your website. Very, very easy to get the data, store it, retrieve it, do all the stuff you need to do with SQL inside of that particular environment. Along with the database storage, there's a couple of other, I hesitate to say more esoteric, but they're more specialized types of storage. It provides blob storage if you happen to have videos, large files, don't necessarily store efficiently, or you don't need the full power of a SQL database to store them in. You can store them in a structured storage environment. There's also table storage for, I call them property bags, name value pairs that you just simply want to be able to store and retrieve in a particular kind of manner. The storage environment inside of Azure is optimized to be able to handle that sort of functionality. There is traffic. So there's a traffic manager that allows you to define rules that specify if a person's coming from this country, I want to make sure they get routed here unless it's going to take too long, and then I'm going to route them to different places. There is caching capability, which again has got to do with being able to improve the performance of your website. I've already mentioned the service bus and the messaging capability and the identity through ACS, Access Control Services, that it has. You can do media decoding and coding and pushing out. There's a content delivery network which will take your static files and push them out close to where your users happen to be. As well, you've got some networking capabilities which is more involved with trying to arrange so that a corporate environment and Azure can act as if they were a single domain and I can move information back and forth. But the idea here is these are building blocks that you can pick and choose. You don't need all of these. You may not need any of these, but if you do decide you need them, they're there, and it's very easy to plug them into the application that you happen to have already out there. Now, we've not yet mentioned mobile services, and we're going to be talking more about mobile services a little bit later on in the next session, but the idea behind mobile services is to provide a combination of website database functionality that is very common if you're working from platforms that are mobile in nature, phones, tablets, Windows Store applications. You have an application out there, it needs to be able to store data in some way, shape, or form, and this provided a very, very nice mechanism for being able to do exactly that. But mobile services has grown to add in things like notifications. So I can do push notifications from an app or a piece of data gets changed on the server, I can push that data out, or I can push a toast notification out to my various clients. I've got server logic that will let me handle validation functionality or to handle the notifications. I can use authentication from Microsoft account or Twitter or Facebook or Google. So I've got a number of different authentication mechanisms that are built in to the mobile services. I've got background scheduling functionality that is available to me. So mobile services has grown to be a very nice central one point for a lot of the kinds of functionality you're likely to want on the back end of a phone or a Windows Store application. There's no deployment that is involved. You create a mobile service and it's there, and you still have the ability to scale up, scale down, and pay for the stuff that you need. So it's a very, very sweet environment for working in the kind of environment that we've been talking about. The developer center itself, so the Azure itself, I've already mentioned that a number of the languages that it supports. It's quite open in terms of what it's able to support. Node.js, Java, PHP, Python, those are all widely used languages. And in terms of being able to manage it, there's a lot of open source stuff. So if you want to be able to manage your Azure from Java or from an Apple platform or through PowerShell, there is a GitHub collection where you can get hold of the SDKs that are available to the various platforms, see what the source code looks like, be able to modify them if that's what you want, see how it happens to be done if you want to be able to manipulate things on your own. But the idea here is that you do have that ability to see how to manage it from outside of the web environment. So from a next steps perspective, The first thing you should try, you should do, is get yourself a free trial. There's a 90-day free trial for Azure that happens to be available. You can see the link on the slide there. It's absolutely worthwhile doing. There's no obligation. There's no cost involved in it. I'd say, hence the word free. But it's gives you a chance to get your feet wet in terms of seeing what this, what Azure has to offer. You would be very surprised to find out just how much there is. And as you kind of explore things, you'll be amazed where you can actually find things that will fit in, and yet at a costing level, it's not going to be very significant. There's a number of Azure virtual workshops that you can take a look at. You can see cloud variations. There's a building connected apps with Windows Azure. There's a migrating applications to Windows Azure, and you can see that there's links for each one of those. As well, there is a Windows Azure training kit that you can absolutely download, and it has a lot of videos, it has a lot of hands-on labs, a lot of materials that will help you get up to speed on what Azure happens to be. And with that, I say thank you so much for listening, and I believe we're going to be taking a break shortly, and hopefully you will come back and see the next session. Thank you very much.